So welcome to what is it? What the hidden treasures of the ATMs and Moshe's ATM book. No, I said it better than that. Let me start with, I don't know, there's an old joke that the only time I take my foot out of my mouth is to change feet. It's a good Feldenkrais joke. Unfortunately, I think I did that. So I got a message on Facebook. Where I think I used somebody else's title for a class that they teach, and I apologized. It was an unconscious homage. But anyway. I was a little embarrassed, so I apologize for that. It's a non-habitual day. My IT guy was over here for a meeting the other day, and he used my desk. And I didn't realize it till this morning. I have this portable desk thing that I like, and he reversed it. So that like the desk part is on the left rather than on the right. So I realized that just as I was setting this up for being with all of you. So, let's jump in. I actually have an agenda for the class to be able to look at so that I can follow it, because otherwise I will just go freeform. So, returning to the source, first let me say a little bit about it. Hold on a second. I'm going to mute everybody here because I can. No, so that we have a good recording. If you want to jump in, you can raise your hand, but I'm going to be looking at the agenda, and if I miss that, you can just unmute yourself and jump in and ask a question, okay? And Rose, do I kiss Joe? No.
Je ne sais pas si tu m'entends.
Oui, je t'entends.
Super. Bonjour à tout le monde.
Bonjour. I'm going to mute you. And so if you haven't used Zoom before, everybody has their own little Brady Bunch square. If you put your mouse on the square, in the upper right-hand corner, you should see unmute, and if you click on that, you can also see rename. So let's see. I'm gonna rename myself and just put where I am. I'm in Santa Cruz, California. So if you do that, then we can see where everybody's from. That's, for instance, I know that Anne-Rose is in Brussels, I think, if she's at home.
Yeah.
Yes. So if you add that, that's kind of a cool thing.
Je ne sais pas ce que je dois faire, en fait, Larry. Excuse-moi, je n'ai pas bien compris.
Non, j'ai dit que là, j'ai arrêté ton sonon, ton micro. Et si tu veux le changer, tu mets ton souris sur le côté haut et droite avec ton photo.
D'accord.
Et là, tu as le choix de... Right? So if I mute you, which I'm going to do, you can unmute yourself and ask a question.
OK, merci.
Oui, pas de quoi. I promise I'll do the rest of this. See, you're all unmuted. And then we get echo. Oh, that's terrible. So thankfully I can mute you. And you can jump in. Anyways, and I promise I will do the rest of this in English. No, I may answer some of Anra's question in French, but I'll translate myself. All right, anyway. So last year, the beginning of last year, at the end of the year before, I said in public that I would, I really wanted to focus on ATM teaching for all the new courses and projects that I'm involved in are going to be about ATM. I mean, not that I haven't been interested in that before. So if you know about the lesson locator, right, which is a card, digital card catalog for Moshe's lessons, you know, obviously I've been participating in things that have to do with teaching ATM. And I've taught advanced trainings about this before, but I think, like, for me, the future of the method really lies in terms of the capacity for reaching people, lies in teaching awareness through movement. And so, you know, all the courses that I'm teaching and developing, and the projects I'm doing are around awareness through movement. And I thought, what better place to start than by looking at the awareness through movement lessons in Moshe's ATM book. And actually, I think that, you know, the inspiration for that came from working for Stephanie Spink, who's an Australian Feldenkrais trainer, in her training in New Zealand. And there she had the students in their ATM practicum teach from the lessons from the ATM book. And it wasn't the first time that I encountered that, but it was the first time in a long time. And it was interesting because I think there's 30 some, almost 40 people in the training perhaps. And so that meant people would have to teach the same lessons more than once, right? And I think they got to teach them the first time in a trio, and then the second time, I don't know if it was the same lesson or a different one, just by themselves. So that was a lot of time with those lessons, those 11 lessons. And yet I thought every minute of it was valuable, right? That there's something to be said, right, for studying the classics. And I think that was the main inspiration for this class. And so I thought it would be interesting to look at these lessons that Moshe chose as the, you know, the vehicle for introducing his method to the world. Like, why these lessons? And some of them, in a way, the answer is more obvious, right? Because some of the lessons are the lessons, you know, they're like on his hit parade. It's like the lessons I don't know, if he was a crooner, it'd be, you know, the songs that everybody asked him to sing in his concert. They'd be the favorites, right? The ones we've all come to love and that we're familiar with. But some of them are not. Some of them are odd and they're not the things that there's like certain lessons that he teaches some version of in almost every introductory public thing that he does, right? Like coordinating flexors and extensors. So my question really in starting the course is, in developing the course was, what is it that we can learn from these lessons? And in a way, what I mean by that is, what is it that we can learn from these lessons as our typical lessons? And what I mean by that is that each one of them is fundamentally different than the other. Not just in terms of what the lesson is about, right? What it has to teach, what we can learn from it, but also in terms of how it's taught. And so in a way, I'm going to change metaphors from a singer to a painter here, right? It's like of the palette that we have, right? Of the the quiver of techniques that we have there. That's a military one, archer's metaphor, right? The collection of the toolbox, whatever you want to say, of the tactics and the techniques and the strategies that we have available. Each of those lessons is fundamentally different. Not just in what it teaches, but how it teaches, right? Or not just in how it creates a possibility for not just what you can learn, but how you can learn from that lesson. So each one has different challenges, and each one has different, well, let's say, tools. And so I think as teachers, we have to understand both what's behind the lesson. Gabi Yaron used to say, well, except when she said the opposite, of course. She's recorded us saying both. One lesson, one story. So here, you know, you have to understand what's the story and also what kind of story is it? I mean, is it, you know, it's like, what kind of book is it? Is it a mystery book? You know, is it a mystery story or is it a cookbook? Is it a travelogue? Or is it a love story? Right? You have to understand the genre, right? That not just what the story is about, but how the story is being told, and then the storytelling devices in it. Oh man, I'm jumping around with metaphors, right? Because, you know, we can ask, how is a lesson like a recipe? How is a lesson like a song? How is a lesson like a play? How is a lesson like a book? And so in taking the ATM lessons on in this way, I think you start to see, like, what Moshe is offering us is overall a tour of, here are the things that my method has to teach, and here are the ways that I offer you that you can learn. And it's also in a remarkably contemporary writing. He is writing to people in the late 1960s, early 1970s in the ATM book. And he's speaking to, you know, the zeitgeist, to the mind of the times. And he's using ideas that are still, to the public anyways, fresh about the nervous system and how it works. And he's, you know, I think Jerry Carson said, one of the things that makes Moshe a genius is that he can make the abstract concrete. So we're going to look at that too, like in Moshe's formation, in his development professionally and personally. How did lessons echo and refer back to how Moshe learned, who he was, his perspectives, his tools? So next question is, out of the lessons that are in the book, which ones am I teaching? And so let me, let me do a little bit of technology here, and I'm going to share my screen so that you can see, there we go, what lessons I'm teaching. This is also on the FAQ. I'll find the link for that and post it, or maybe I'll send that to you in an email afterwards. So here are the lessons. Some fundamental properties of movement, which if you don't know the titles, that's one which you've probably all done. You're lying on the floor like an X, and you lift one arm and the other, and you lift the legs and the head and then everything together, lying on the back and lying on the belly. Differentiation of parts and functions of breathing. The official title, the long title, of coordination of the flexor muscles and of the extensors, which always trips me up, right? Why not of the flexor muscles and of the extensor muscles? Or, like we say, of the flexors and extensors. I mean, is that just Moshe is not perfect English, or is he trying to say something? I don't know. We can vote on that later. perfecting the self-image, which is a lesson which, you know, I don't know, it's one of those lessons I fell in love with a long time ago. And it's one of those lessons that people are afraid of in many ways. It's a lesson about rolling from lying to sitting. A good part of it is in the imagination. And the test movement is putting your foot on top of your head. And I know that you might find this surprising, but I remember years ago, this would be like in 1980. I know, I'm not that old. In 1984, it had to be in 84. Maybe it was in 83. I think it was in 84. With the kitchen table group here in town, we organized Stress Awareness Week. It was a small group of graduate students and students at the university. We organized Stress Awareness Week in town, and the mayor declared it Stress Awareness Week. And in my introduction to the Feldenkrais Method, I taught perfecting the self-image to a group of people who had never done the Feldenkrais Method before. You may, you know, whatever you think about it. It was fun. 10, the movement of the eyes organizes the movement of the body. Anybody know what lesson that is? Just pipe in. What do we all call that? Ooh, what happened? Oh, yeah. Sorry, my screen share got paused there.
Dead bird.
Dead bird, yes. You know, in one training, in the first training that I co-directed with Elizabeth Berenger years ago, we made a pact amongst the whole faculty that no one would refer to the lesson as dead bird, that we would talk about it in front of the class and in person consistently 100% of the time as the seated twist. And you know, Moshe Feldenkrais said we should be careful what metaphors we use, right? And that title, Dead Bird, comes from the San Francisco training where he says, hold your arm in front of you with your elbow hanging down and your hand in front of your face and your elbow hanging down like the broken wing of a dead bird. And you know, it's like, that's like a, It's a language virus, right? It just spreads, and it is so infectious that once it starts, it just spreads throughout the group. All right, is that a 100th monkey? I don't know. And then the last lesson is becoming aware of the parts of which we are not conscious, with the help of those of which we are conscious, which I think. Some people might know as the five lines or rolling an imaginary ball the size of a marble or something. Yeah. Excuse me. So there you go. There's the lessons. And you know, you may ask why, and the answer, of course, is always because. And that's because I think these lessons, they say something fundamental. They somehow fit together for me. When I was looking at divvying up the lessons between two courses, and I wanted the approach in the class to be like the approach in an ATM, that we take time, right? And you know, there's a I'm gonna stop sharing my screen here. There's a puzzling attribute to you know, the Moshe's teaching, as it were, right? And that is that, I mean, if we teach the lesson exactly the way that Moshe taught it, then I think we fail in a way. I mean, Moshe never taught the same lesson twice. Right? It was never exactly the same. It was alive. He was responding to the people in the room and to wherever his thinking was. You know, so if you teach the same lesson the same way as Feldenkrais did, then you're not doing what Feldenkrais did. Right. And I think that's a important distinction. I think, I mean, like at the beginning of learning, following the lesson in that way, teaching the lesson as a script, right, is I think that that's a great place to begin, right? And many people have been exposed to the method because, you know, they were in a class where somebody read the lessons, and I think that there's nothing wrong with doing that. I think, you know, to be a good teacher and to enjoy it, I think there is a distinction between, you know, being an actor playing the part of a Feldenkrais teacher and reading the lines and being a Feldenkrais teacher. And at first, I think it's good enough to act like that. I don't think it's satisfying. And I think it's so hard because, I mean, that's where I was when I started to teach. I still have my note cards from that class, you know, and I had to say exactly what Moshe said, exactly when he said it, because I was afraid that if I didn't, I'd miss something important, or even worse, that I'd mess up the lesson, right? And in a way, it's like being a fundamentalist. You have to do things exactly that way. And I mean, I guess it's a wonderful thing to do. I don't think a good teacher has to make up new lessons. I think a good teacher breathes life into the lessons by making them responsive to the students that are there. Okay, I'm jumping out of order. Sorry from my plan here, but let me go back. Another distinction that's important is the difference between how we teach and what we teach. I think how we teach is permissive. We had a discussion this morning, is Alexander and I in a group, which I had to pop out of to answer Facebook questions and prepare for today's meeting with y'all. And but we were talking about how the Feldenkrais method is indirect. And I said it's benevolently devious. You know, it's tricky in a kind way. And tricky, I don't mean like playing a trick on somebody, but like a magic trick. You know, a magician doesn't fool people. A magician creates situations where people fool themselves. The Feldenkrais teacher doesn't teach people. We create situations where people can learn from themselves. That's how we teach. And it's incredibly permissive. I think sometimes people mistake that for thinking that we have nothing to teach, right? That the lesson isn't about anything. That we say you can do it this way or that way, you can do it whatever way is comfortable, doesn't mean that there isn't a better way to do it. I mean, the A1 right way, because our structure, our history, our physical constraints are going to be different, and that's going to inform our possibilities. But there is still behind the method an idea of how do we move as best as we can. Right? It's like judo. It doesn't matter how big you are or how strong you are. It matters how coordinated you are and how you can respond in the moment rather than out of habit. What this requires to understand what we have to teach means understanding what holds a lesson put together. It means making a distinction between being a teacher and a student, right? Because for the student, it's a discovery process. The student doesn't have to know what the lesson is about. The teacher has to know what the student can discover, how to help her or him discover, and what's behind the lesson, what it's about, the direction that it's going in. So that is a kind of a philosophical overview of the class. The other day, Katharina Holmes said, in referring to this class in the AY group, she called it philosophical, which I took as a compliment. Thank you, Katharina. And which I really greatly appreciate it. You know, and it was also a surprise, like philosophical. I mean, I think the class, it certainly it's a way of thinking, but it's also a practical approach to learning about you know the question that the class that this class is designed to answer is what do you need to know about a lesson in order to teach it well. And what I think you need to know about a lesson in order to teach it well is that you have to start by asking one question. What holds the lesson together? Right? For the student, the lesson can be a set of beads, like just one instruction that you put on a thread and you make a necklace out of, right? Or whatever, arm band, whatever it is. But, you know, from the student's perspective, you know, it's like when you look at someone's necklace, you see the pearls, you see the beads. You don't see the string. The teacher needs to know the string, the thread that holds the lessons together. And that's what this class is about. What questions do you have to ask? What questions can you ask so that you can reliably find out the answer to that question? What holds this lesson together? So that is actually kind of that, you know, that's a frame of the lesson of the course. In the course, I'm going to teach the lessons live in 2 half-day mini workshops. I'll record those. You'll get a couple of other half-day workshops that I've taught, also the recordings of them. And that way you'll see how the lessons can be strung together in more than the what happens in a one-day workshop format. And you'll also, you also get to see the lessons or hear or do the lessons in more than one way. And I'm also will give you recordings each as we go through the course to two other versions of those lessons. So you'll end up with 4 or 5 different ATMs, versions of the same ATM. It's kind of like a training program. Why do we have more than one trainer? Right, we have more than one trainer because what you see is despite the differences in, you know, what Moshe would have called our handwriting, our style, right, our teaching style, the method is consistent. And so despite each instantiation of the lesson, despite each performance of that choreography, that composition, which varies, there's something that holds it together. And so I offer you those, and some of them are really classic. I mean, I'm really following Moshe's line. I'm using my own language to respect his copyright. And some of them are much more, let's say, inventive, creative variations on a theme. So you'll have a collection of lessons. And you know, I'll ask you to do at least the ones that I'm teaching in the mini workshop. So we'll have the same set of lessons to refer to. And then we'll get together and I'll do a presentation about 45 minutes or an hour long, where I'll unpack the lesson and I'll talk about, I'll go through the process of asking these questions that I think, you know, being a good movement detective about the ATM lessons, understand the lesson, not from my personal perspective, my experience, that's the student's perspective, but from the teacher's perspective, from the lesson's perspective. And there, I think if we have the same set of tools, and we are operating in the same methodology with the same behavioral presuppositions and, excuse me, hold on a second, with the same behavioral presuppositions and the same perspectives, you know, same perceptual perspective, asking the same questions, we'll all find the same thing about those lessons. And I'll point out also where I think understanding Moshe, his history and the things that he couldn't help but see because of what he had learned, you know, how that adds to our perspective of understanding the lessons. And then at least twice a week, we'll have after the class and after, and one other day. And a few people have asked about other times. If enough people tell me another time where they have the same time available, then and the class gets a little bit bigger, perhaps I can offer another session. Then we'll have these discussions, question and answer sessions. And there you can ask, you know, whatever you like about your experience of the lessons or what we're talking about. I'll give you homework, which it'll be designed to do. There's things that you can do on your own. And I'm praying to the computer gods willing, that we'll be using our new online school. So instead of getting the homework through email, you can log into the site and the homework will be there and all the links to the various files will be there. I think we've got it to work so that we can send you SMSs to remind you about stuff and to tell you what's available so you can have that immediately. You can access all of that through your phone so you can learn whatever you like. I'm going to play around with different kinds of homework assignments. So some of those will be things you do with your study buddy and you can choose one or we'll give you one. Some of those will be things that you can do on your own. For years, in terms of online schools, I think one of the ones that I respect the most is called Moodle, and it was developed by this Australian educational, I don't know, some guy who's doing his PhD in education and pedagogy. And it was designed to use the internet to bring students together rather than to keeping us apart and to facilitate learning. And so the facilitating learning part, one of the things I loved about Moodle is that there you gave, if you give a question and answer test, the teacher had the option of, instead of making it a test for testing where the teacher rates your knowledge, it's a test for learning. So like if you give the right or the wrong answer, it says, sorry, that's the wrong answer. I'm going to try again. And it tells you why. So we don't have Moodle because it doesn't fit in our little ecosystem of, you know, the way our system's set up. But I think we figured out, actually, Trey, who figured this out working on somebody else's problem years ago, figured out how I can do that. So I'm going to try some of those quizzes where, with the terminology and the ideas that are in the class, where you can kind of self-test. So all of these things I'm talking about right now are a little bit about how hopefully that makes this version of our TTS better than the previous ones, because I've learned from my previous mistakes. You know, as I like to say, learning is what you get when you don't get what you want. And, you know, I wanted things to go smoothly and easily, and they didn't always do that. So hopefully this will be better. You know, it's the interwebs, and I have never failed more in my life than in doing these projects. I've also never done anything more exciting or anything intentionally contributed to creating another fucking growth experience, pardon my French. This time around, I'm also offering an ATM only option, because I thought some people might just want to do the ATMs. And I don't know, like I said in one of the promotions, are you getting enough ATMs? So if you can sign up for the ATMs, do the live workshops, get the edited recordings when they're ready, and get the recordings from the other previous ones that I have, the other mini workshops that I've done. in RTTS, I covered these six lessons. The other five lessons in the book are covered in Behind the Curtain, which is the follow-up course for this class. And this class, and that this class is a requirement for that one. And that class is, whereas Returning to the Source S answers the question, you know, what do I need to know about a lesson to teach it well? The other class is about what do I need to know about my students, right? About how they learned to teach the lesson well. How do I make the lesson fit the students? And so you could say that Returning to the Source is about teaching style and content, and Behind the Curtain is about the learning strategy, the learning strategies of the students, and also understanding that different kinds of instructions we have in lessons and how to use them in response to where the students are. All right, one more thing. Like I said in the beginning, that this class is a part of my overall commitment to ATM. You know, and I think ATM is like the Rodney Dangerfield. Sorry, that's a historic reference. The Rodney Dangerfield of the Feldenkrais method. Rodney Dangerfield was a Borscht Belt comedian, started in the 1960s, I think, and one of his punchline or his tagline was, "I don't get no respect." And I think sometimes ATM don't get no respect. I mean, I think it, you know, it was kind of like, ooh, FI is the real thing. And I'm glad to say that's changing. You know, I mean, I think like Quan Wong's initiative with the AY A Day group, which is awesome, has really changed that. I think, you know, I spoke at the beginning, I apologize about unconsciously barring Daniela Picard's title for her course, but I think Daniela has been doing that by teaching her classes about ATM teaching. And so I'm glad that that's starting, hopefully, to change. My interest has been, you know, ever since I started doing courses, industrial strength Feldenkrais courses for Feldenkrais teachers, Feldenkrais courses for people on the job, working with the bus drivers and people in grocery stores and at banks and whatever. You know, I think ATM is so important. And as Beth just said, rightfully so, that must have started with ATM. So these days I call my classes neurophysical education, or because I think it is about the coordination part, the neuro part of the physical education. And because I have a PhD in kinesiology, which, you know, historically was created, the kinesiology departments were created in the 1960s when they put men and women's PE departments together, and that forever changed history. For instance, the women discovered that the men were getting paid more. And I think when I joined the kinesiology department almost 30 years later, that was still an issue. I mean, salaries have been even, but I think that took a long time for them to that's unacceptable. No one should accept that. And, you know, kinesiology is a nice way to say PE. And I think we are physical education teachers, not just physical education, but I think out of respect for our colleagues who have been doing this for their whole lives, I want to say that that's what we do, you know, and in a different way and in a unique way. We are not just that. We are, you know, we teach coordination, not physical education. And I think showing people how valuable that is so that they can appreciate what we do, I think that's my mission, right, in terms of teaching ATM. And there's more to come. I can talk about that later, but I think I've talked a lot. J'espère que j'ai pas parlé trop vite toujours pour toi, Anne-Rose, et pour tout le monde d'autre. But if I did speak too fast, please, I'm glad to repeat. Anyways, the floor is yours. Je suis à l'écoute. So can you, you can unmute yourself if you like, or wave your hand, or... Yeah, okay. Oops, sorry. Hi, Rivka.
Hi. One of the things I noticed, and the difference between when I'm teaching an FI and when I'm teaching an ATM, is that I have some, not total, but some, I have more control over what happens in an FI than I do in an ATM.
That sucks.
It really makes the dance bigger.
Oh, I like that.
It makes the dance bigger.
That's beautiful.
I love it.
So, Larry?
Yes.
Hi, this is Shannon.
Hey,
hi. I've been playing around with the concept of competency and comprehension. And I realize that when I'm teaching some ATM, I'm competent, but I'm not in my comprehension. So I look at competency as something that can exist without comprehension.
Mm.
Comprehension makes the lesson come alive. It allows the lesson to become more unlimited, evolve more. And so I'm excited about, and I have always valued ATM. It has made me a better FI giver. And that thanks to you many, 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 many years ago.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So the idea of when you say mimicking Moshe, mm-hmm. that's where I would say I'm very competent. But in some lessons, I'm not, I don't have the comprehension, the depth of what that lesson really is underneath and then what's underneath. The continual questions that can come out that can help me have more comprehension in what I do instead of just competence. You know, I think over the years we all become competent speakers, but the comprehension piece might be missing. So if that makes any sense.
Oh yeah, I think, if I understand what you're saying, it makes you think of the phrase being unconsciously competent.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're all, you know, in a way, like that's the bugaboo, right? When let's see, like Moshe's example was, you know, somebody can be athletically speaking can be really adroit and remarkably coordinated, but let's say, you know, like I think his example was, you know, going when the Olympic Games were in Mexico City, right? Which is at a really high, if I remember correctly, a high elevation.
Altitude, yeah.
You know, people who were training at sea level weren't ready for that because they couldn't adjust to the changing circumstances. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem when you're unconsciously competent. It's a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And so your ability to respond is limited because you don't, when something changes, you don't know what to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see in professional sports how many injuries are happening and how many more injuries than years and years and years before. Is they're becoming, they're relying more on the equipment rather than the human being.
I hadn't. So I have to think about that. Thanks.
Yeah.
Would you say that again? Because I'm sorry.
I had the privilege of sitting next to a 95-year-old. He was the doctor for the 1980s hockey team.
Okay.
And he was speaking on just the way it was. You know, the boards were only 2 feet high, and the only reason why you wanted to shove somebody over the board was to land in a pretty woman's lap. Fast forward, I made a comment. I said, don't you think that the equipment has gotten to the point where you're relying on the equipment and not the integrity of the, so you build a machine, the person who builds the machine has the comprehension of what he wants the machine to do. Mm-hmm. And then you become the machine, but you've lost the responsibility or the availability to respond. And I think if you put on a helmet to a football player, they've said that if you put those leather helmets back on, you'd see less injuries.
Hmm.
And then the, is this making, I'm not doing a very good job of explaining.
Oh
it,
my God. Yeah. I mean, look, yeah. And it's funny cause it's you know, like I'm, so it's for some reason. So it makes me think of this. This is a really odd example, but it makes me think of user interface and user design.
Mm-hmm.
When you create like nuclear power plants interfaces. So there's a famous example of one, I can't remember if this was at Three Mile Island or whatever. They had like triple, that's like double or triple warning systems, right? And what had happened is that one of the levels stopped working. The other one wasn't working before, and they'd hung a sign over it saying out of order, and that was covering the third registration, which was working.
Right. Wow.
And so there's this way in which, you know, the environment is, it's structuring your choices, right? Like the affordances, it's shaping what choices are possible.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So if you think of the brain as this incredible system of redundancies,
mm-hmm.
So if you run out, like a pilot, an airplane is set up to have a lot of redundancy, but that's a machine. Eventually you're going to run out of 3, 4, and 5. So when does the ability to develop more redundancy to develop more competency and comprehension?
Yeah, I got it. I think it's I understand what you're saying. I think that's
okay.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, and look, I think the other thing is when you know, like, this is a really rough paraphrase, right, of Blake, the poet. But, you know, he said the conscious mind is it's useful in a few occasions. You're like when you're figuring out where, like, think about a trip. When you're figuring out where you want to go, and you're making reservations and all that, right? When you get lost, you want to pull out the map and figure out where you are. And when you've been wandering and you want to look back, the rest of the time it interferes, right? And in teaching, you do want to be able to, you know, be unconsciously competent. But you also want to know in the moments where something doesn't work, you know, like what are the things that are most likely not to work? And what do you do in those moments? Right? Because there, I think one of the phrases I hate the most, sorry, that's a really strong word, but it's true, that I detest, is this phrase that some people say, well, there's a million possibilities. Well, the moment you say that, I feel stupid. You know, like a million, I can't count that high. And Sophia, I'll answer your question in a second. You know, so, you know, I think in most situations, there are just a few. And in like what Rivka was saying about having more or less control, in a teaching situation, when you understand what choices are available and you understand the use of constraints as a teacher, in instructions and in position and in the shapes and configurations that we make, then that's a tool that we have. That's a main tool that we have, right? If you know what you're going for, then how do you kind of create a funnel that takes someone in that direction? Then you know when something's not working, and you hit a hitch. Well, first of all, you recognize when something's not working because you know what to look for. And then you know what to do. And Sophia asked, what's the difference between the Tuesday and the Thursday discussion questions? I don't know. You'll have to show up. It's just that it's happening twice. So you can come to one or the other. Often what's amazing is there's very little difference. So often it's the same questions, Sometimes it has to do with me not being clear about what I was saying. And sometimes it has to do with just what's challenging or how what I was saying meets where y'all are coming from. So it's I'll record both of them. If they're really different, I'll make both of them available. If one of them doesn't work, then we have a backup, you know, plan B backup. If they're both good, but one of them's better, I'll put the better one on, because I don't expect people to listen to two if they miss them, but I will put at least one on for you. And if they both mess up, well, I've got a few years of backup in my back pocket. Okay, someone else? Here, hold on a second. I just got to plug my machine back in. Voila. Paula, did you wave at me?
And now I'm unmuted, yes?
Yes.
Great. So I have done Returning to the Source once before, and I'd like to do it again. Maybe that makes me a remedial learner, but I think it's going to be even better. I'm just interested, you know, talking about the story behind the lesson, the red thread. We've talked a little bit about this mm-hmm. on AY A Day. And I think, you know, we have a tendency to resist the idea of the red thread, to resist agreement on something, right, as being the story of the lesson, or maybe people think it's like we're saying it's the truth of the lesson, which I don't think it is. It's the story behind the lesson. It's the thread. Well, and it doesn't take away from the individual's own experience of the lesson. Everybody in the room can have a different experience. They can take what they need from the lesson. But to resist the idea that it actually exists, I think leads us to that path where we get to the Feldenkrais isn't about anything, you know? And so yeah. That's just my opinion about this. And I feel that resistance often, you know?
Look, I think there's a, I moved because I maybe there was too much light behind me there. So now you can see the busyness in the background. There's a third factor. So you're talking about, you know, well, that we can say what the lesson is about, and that still leaves room for each student to have their own experience. I think it also leaves room for each teacher to have their own style of teaching, right? And so, you know, it's like teaching, I don't know, algebra or music theory or knitting. You know, everyone's going to teach it differently. And some people, I mean, I'm working on a project with Shante Bowler, with one of the Feldenkrais teachers here in town, who's a surfer, and we're doing some stuff with the surf community here. And I like went and watched Surf School recently, and then I happened to just, I was still hanging out on the beach, get to witness a couple of other people teaching, and I watched Richard Smith teach, who is like, he started the first surfing school in the world, and he's been making a living as a surf school, as a surf teacher for 40 years. He's awesome. I gave him a lesson the other day. It was really fun. Anyways, I watch him teach, and he's just really brilliant and so generous and so physically present. And then I watched somebody else, actually I watched two other people teach it horribly. Just like in a way that, you know, it would be impossible. You would have to know what it is before you could do it. So there's something about being a better teacher or a worse teacher, and there's something about the style in which you teach. And like, I think if what we have is a method, and right, not just one man's genius and ability, but we have a method, a methodology, a way of going about things, then I think there's some basic things that we could agree to. We could have different interpretations. There could be different schools within the method. But, you know, in a way, for me, it's even more than a method. It's a domain of it's a way of approaching the world. And it's unique. It's not a method of physical exercise or, I don't know, yoga or rehabilitation, right? It is its own thing. It's about coordination and balance and being able to do the things you love. And I think underneath it, yeah, I agree with you, Paula. There is something we could agree to. And you know, it's the essential. You know, so it doesn't, let's take a piece of music, right? There are the notes. There is the composition and the structure. And then there is each person's interpretation and that day's performance. And those things are different. But we're not going to argue about the notes. Hopefully. And then maybe, you know, that would be a nice way of saying that, you know, Feldenkrais without that is like music without music theory. Doesn't mean you can't be a genius. It doesn't mean you can't play well and not know music theory. Doesn't mean you can't compose and not know music theory, but most of us aren't geniuses. Moshe was, but I think the method to be learnable has to be understood, right? Or as Shannon would say, we have to comprehend it. And comprehend has that word in there, henshin, which means to grasp. All right, anyone else? I hear somebody, but I don't hear some background sound.
That's me.
Okay, yeah.
That was me. I will close it down.
Oh, okay. I thought you want to ask a question while you're here?
No, but I have a background.
Okay. Yeah. Say hello to who's ever there for me.
Hello.
All right. Let me check the chat here. The red thread is the one thing. Yes, it is. Sophia, what's the cost? It is $347, except, here, did I actually put it there? Except if, because the early registration deadline passed. It was over on, I think, I don't remember what day, but it's gone. But if you use that coupon, so if you go to the website and you use that coupon, then you would be able to register and get $50 off. So basically you would get the same price as the early registration price. And given my conversations with that I had this morning, let's see, is this the right thing? No, let me, can't do it there. You want to do that? Yeah, I think I can do that. Here, let me, I'll walk you through it because I can. I think that's right. Yeah. Let me share that screen. So if you go to the Mind in Motion site and you go to returning to the source, I'm just zipping to the bottom of the page, hope I didn't make anybody sick. So at the very bottom, there's the ATM only. It says sign me up for ATMs only, but if you want to take the class, click on sign me up. Here we have a little participation agreement about the videos, about what your rights are and so forth. And then you can sign that. Click proceed. And that will take you to the payment page. And then at the very top, it says, I have a coupon code. Let's see. There we go. If I enter my coupon code there, and it really doesn't matter whether you write it in big letters or in small letters. If you apply the coupon, you will see that. What? Oh, now that's a mistake. Oh, it was working. You know what? I will send you an email because I don't know why it says it's not working, but it should. Oops, I can't fix that at the moment. But I promise I'll send you an email with the coupon code. It might not be until tomorrow, or if you go ahead and you sign up for it now, I'll give you the $50 back. But I don't know what happened. To err is human, to truly mess things up requires technology. Oh, I'm so sorry. I apologize, but I will. I'll get that fixed.
Larry, maybe it's interesting for the people who will sign up who are not in the United States. I signed up this morning, and there is. You have to look if you want to pay. I paid with the Visa card in dollar or in euro. Yeah. And I did it twice.
I saw that, and I'm going to reimburse you, and I'll also give you back the extra 50, so you'll get it for the early reg price. Okay.
Excuse me.
Oh no! Don't worry. But I tell you what, when I'm perfect, then you can be perfect, and before then, it's okay. Don't worry. It's easy to fix. You know, my bookkeeper will be. She comes to work tomorrow, so she'll fix it tomorrow. So by tomorrow evening, it should be fixed. Okay. All right. Oh dang. Anyway. Sorry about that. But I'm glad I found out with you. Okay. Let me answer Anne Rose. Just pour savoir si j'ai bien compris, il y a deux moments en direct. No, pas du tout. Okay, so Anne Rose asked us that there were two times where things would be live and if everything else would be in audio. And actually, everything will be on audio and video or video, depending on what it is. So let me explain that. So there are the two live ATM workshops, and within 48 hours to give me a little bit of leeway, but probably within an hour or two after the course is over, we'll send you the link to the audio, the rough audio and the video of the workshop. And then of the mini workshops. And then after the talks on Tuesday are going to be live. And the question and answers on Tuesday will be live. And the question and answer on Thursday will be live. And you'll get access to the unedited video and audio of the talk and the unedited audio, maybe the video of the question and answers. And then we'll edit the ATM audio, the video of the presentations and the audio of the presentations. And so you have the video and audio of the presentations and the audio of the talk and of the question and answer. Well, of the talks edited and the questions and the answer, unless there's something terrible that happens, unedited at the end. So everything is live. And everything will be available recorded.
Et c'est quel jour? Ça, j'ai pas compris, Larry.
Here, I can... hold on a second. Let me show you again. Let's go back here. And I just put it on the screen so you can see it. Okay. Let me share my screen one more time here. So the introduction is this Thursday. It's at 9:15 on, which is your time. It would be 6:15 in the evening. Mm-hmm. And then the mini workshops are on Saturday and Sunday, and they start at 6:30 in the evening, your time. It runs mm-hmm. for 3 hours and 15 minutes. And then the presentations are on Tuesdays, two in January, two in February, two in March. And they are from, this would be 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. your time. And then the discussion is from, would be 10:15 p.m. to 11:30 your time, or 1:15 p.m. in the Pacific, and the West Coast of the U.S., 4:15 p.m. on the East Coast. And then Thursdays at 9 a.m., that would be 6 p.m. your time on Thursday in Europe, and noon on the East Coast of the U.S. Okay?
J'avais pas du tout compris ça, en fait.
Well, so it's all on the website.
D'accord, mais je vais revoir bien alors, parce que là, j'ai l'impression d'être passé à côté de quelque chose.
Okay, well, so basically, it's on Saturdays, and it would be in the evening your time for the mini workshops. The presentation where I'm unpacking the lesson, and the first discussion would be on Tuesday evening going into the night, and then Thursday evening starting at 6 p.m., okay? So Tuesday and Thursday evenings and Saturday evening.
Merci, Larry.
Okay, yeah. And here, let me copy the address and put it in the chat. Stop sharing my screen. There we go. All right. Yeah, Misha, I change the times every time because I can't do it all the time, so try to make it available. And yes, absolutely, Shannon. You can do it on your own. And look, here, hold on a second. Let me just mute everybody there. Sorry about that. You can do it on your own. And also, some people do it on their own and then make an arrangement with me separately just to do some individual coaching sessions. And that's certainly an option. And I'll give you, a reduction on the price for the normal price if you want to do that. Okay. Yeah. There's this course, there's Behind the Curtain. And then the next course is it's based on Workshops at Work, which was a 15-day advanced training on ATM that I taught a few times. That was really a labor of love. It was definitely not a money-making venture, but it was great. It was so fun. It was awesome to take that amount of time and to look at understanding lesson. How do you prepare a lesson? Not just a lesson, but a whole curriculum. How do you put lessons together? What happens before and after? How do you incorporate what we've learned about learning in the last 50 years, and what we've learned about how we can improve the way we teach in the last 50 years, putting that together and preparing lessons, and then also learning the skills of being in front of the group. So understanding the life of a group, how to facilitate that, developing your ability, your linguistic ability, like how you speak, becoming aware of how you sound and making choices about that in a group, what to pay attention to with your students and how to respond to it. If Returning to the Source and Behind the Curtain are philosophical or let's say they're thinking oriented, primarily. This course is doing and noticing oriented. You know, it's really about building the skills of being an ATM teacher. And that will lead to the part two of that will be taking the lessons, excuse me, that we've studied in that class and teaching everyone who wants to, who participate in the project, teaching the same lessons the same week, everyone who wants to be part of the program around the world. And having it so that, you know, you'll have learned the lessons, we'll have talked about how to promote them, that you'll teach the lessons. So it's a way of using the internet to bring students to local teachers so that we create a kind of network effect where we're all teaching the same material. The students will be able to interact with you through a forum. Oh, I forgot to say that. We have a forum on the, it's also another new thing for returning to the Source 6. So we'll have an online forum where you can have an ongoing conversation with the other students in the class between the meetings and ask questions there as well. But there, for this project, you'll have a forum with your students so you can be in contact with them ongoingly in between the classes. We'll have contact as teachers so that we'll meet in between the class to debrief what happened that week and how to deal with that the following week. And the students will be able to they'll get homework. The homework will be kind of it'll be network homework. So they'll be able to respond and share their responses with all of the other students taking the classes all over the world at the same time. So that the idea is to create a community of learners and to have the conversation there be about their experience. So that they're front and center. And the proposal is really to offer the curriculum and the teaching approach and the marketing and the way of connecting. And having a project we can do together, and everyone can do it with their own style, but kind of using the same approach as an experiment. So that's where I'm going with the things that I'm talking about. So there you go. Let's see. Yeah, thanks, Grace. Yeah, I think sharing just sharing the times and look, if those times don't work, I'm going to teach this again. You know, there are 250 Feldenkrais teachers who have taken the course so far. I don't have all of everybody on my email list, but I think there's maybe 6,000 or 7,000 Feldenkrais teachers in the world or people who have taken trainings. So, I'm going to continue teaching this class. I'm re-recording the presentations this time. And after this time, they will be recorded for a while because I've gotten kind of an update to that. I will keep the live ATM part because I think doing ATMs together, each in our own places, together and apart, is a really valuable thing, and doing the question and answers is really important. But I think some other people may start doing that too, so that they'll be kind of like teaching assistants, doing study sections, so we can have smaller sections and more people involved. So, anyways, that's the plan. So let's see. I think that's a great question, Shannon. Look, I think, so Shannon asked, what do you do about, working with people who are in an older cohort, like octogenarians? Look, I think lessons, if a lesson was like a medication, it would come with a label. And the label would say, don't do this with these people. Watch out for these things. And if someone has a difficulty, here are the ways you could modify it. So one of the things we will talk about with all of the lessons is how do you modify them? And some of them you can't do. I mean, I think like, you know, with a group of people, you know, walking into your standard kind of residential setting, nursing home, assisted living facility, I think, you know, doing lessons where you're lying on your belly and, you know, like fundamental properties of movement, you wouldn't start there with a group that isn't sure that if they get on the floor, they'll be able to get back up. And that's where you'd want to start with that group, you know, with doing that. Maybe actually before that, you want to start with things they can do while they're sitting, right? And I think like teaching older people, by which I actually mean older than me usually, right? And I'm getting there. but I mean, you know, teaching people in that kind of setting, it's a very special situation, right? It's really different. It's like teaching kids in a grade school. That's also different. Or, you know, and like, you know, like for instance, there are two groups that don't know what a rhetorical question is, right? Like if they just don't understand it. School teachers and people in the cohort you're talking about, they just answer your questions, usually out loud. So you have to be prepared for that. Right. So, you know, that's the kind of question I address a little bit. And that's the kind of thing we could talk about in the question and answer periods. And we can also talk about, like, how do you adapt this to FI, to your pedagogical reasoning in giving a hands-on lesson. You know, the idea is to have a set of tools. One of the things that's evident from the conversations we have when we talk about awareness to movement, like on the AYA day group, is that people come from different backgrounds and have different trainings, have different lives beforehand and different perspectives. And we don't have a common language, right? And which means that sometimes we're saying the same thing, but we're thinking we're talking about something different. And sometimes we think someone's saying the same thing, but they mean something different, right? And sometimes it takes so long just to define what we're saying, right? So the advantage to having a professional language, to having jargon, to having a shared methodology, is that we can have the behind-the-scenes talk as teachers. We're understanding, you know, the vocabulary and the concepts means that we can get to something much deeper than we have to do if we're always at the beginning of the book if we're always defining our terms. And this is about moving past that. And talking about moving past that, I think I moved past the time. So Sophia, like I said, we can offer, you know, I'd be willing to offer another time. So if those of you who can't make the times I've offered, if you send me an email with the times that you're available, if there's a large enough group, that would be, yeah, whatever times you would be available during the week. So let's say between 7 a.m. Let me show you. Let me think about that. Yeah, between 7 a.m. Pacific and 9 p.m. Pacific time, any day of the week, if you tell me what days you're available and what times, if at least five people have a common time available, I will gladly add another section to the class, okay? And if not, just wait, but tell me anyway what that will be, and I can make it. If it doesn't work for everybody, I can offer that as a possibility for next time. And I think next time I'm going to make it that I'll offer like six or eight times, and the three most, I'll let people vote, and the three most popular times will be the ones I'll do the class or something like that. It's more complicated that way, but it might make it available to people who otherwise don't come. Okay, Beth, I got that. Next time. You know, somebody wrote me like about this particular webinar and said, doesn't anybody go to church anymore? And I wanted to write back and say, well, I did go to church for 3 years once, almost every Sunday, and every day before Easter, for whatever, however many days that is. And I carried Christ in effigy around the church even 1 year at the Russian Orthodox Church in San Francisco, which has a bell from Tsar Nicholas in it. And when I was married and my husband was Russian Orthodox. But, you know, other than that, I never went to church, because when I did go to pray, it was at temple, which was on Saturdays. And so it is impossible to make everybody happy. And that's why I'm glad I get to do it more than once. Okay. Excuse me. Would anyone like the last word? I'm going to shut the recording off. But beforehand, does anyone want the last word?
I do.
Please.
So one of the things that, having taken the courses before, and I won't be taking it this time because of the things that are going on in my life that just, it just won't work. And having come to work with you in Santa Cruz, one of the things that I am really impressed with that you do is that you combine your experience and your knowledge of what goes on in ATM and in FI in a way that every time I teach a class, I know I've worked with you, which is just amazing. I would never have guessed that anybody could do that. So.
Well, thank you. I mean, you did that, but thank you. Thank you very much, Rivka. And look, you know, if you take the class once, you get access to all of the materials. So you will get the recordings of the new presentations.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, because you bought it once. If you want to take the whole class again and do the homework and everything, well, then you can take the class again. And I think you get all the content there. I don't know if I can make all the new homework available. Just as a, I don't have to think about that. Maybe I could just give you, I don't know. Interactively, no, but perhaps I can give you like a view of what the assignments are. That was a very sweet thing to say. Thank you. All right. I unless someone else has something else to say, I can shut the recording off, and then I can hang out here and answer any questions, and we can make silly jokes if you want. Anyone else want to say anything officially?
Yes.
Please, Linda.
Hi, Linda. Can you hear me? Hi. I just wanted to say that, yes, I have taken this course from you, and anyone that hasn't done it yet, you will never regret it if you do it. So thank you, Larry.
You know, when you say things like that, I kind of wish my mom was still alive. You know, because I think she'd really appreciate it. So thanks. All right. Well, look, I'm going to shut the recording off. Thank you for coming. Oh, sorry,
Barbara. I also have to say something, Barbara.
Please.
I got 2 FIs from you, and some via via also NYAD, some ATMs, and I refound that what I got in FI in the ATMs you gave.
Thank you. Thank you. J'ai compris. All right. Let me shut the recording off. Thank you all for spending part of your Sunday with me. Appreciate it.